Good morning, live from Olympia with 7th Legislative District State Senator Shelley Short and Representatives Andrew Engel and Hunter A. Bell on Okanagan Country Radio. I'm your host, Tracy Ellis, with the Washington State Senate Republican Caucus. You can email me with your questions. It's tracy.ellis@leg.wa.gov. That's tracy.ellis@leg.wa.gov. Or call 509-826-0100, 509-826-0100. And Representatives Engel and Abel, you weren't able to join us last week. A little bit busy with work. Not that this isn't work, but I know Representative Abel, that you were working on in the Finance Committee, and a lot of tax bills in front of you, big Democrat tax proposals. Talk about some of the stuff that you ultimately ended up voting against in committee, but that you will eventually see on the House floor.
Yeah, good morning, Tracy. Like you said, out last week with back-to-back-to-back Finance Committee meetings throughout most of the week. Our chair called it Finance Fun Week. I don't know if I would add fun in there or not. It was really a series of Democrat efforts to raise taxes, and we counted well over a dozen proposals to increase or allow the option for local tax increases. On a variety of subjects. I was really proud of the Republican members of the committee. We voted against them all, one up, one down, two up, two down. For the tax increases that were proposed, we also offered a series of amendments. And one of them would have provided that any local tax increase needed to be approved by the voters. And the other one provided that the tax revenue needed to be a credit against the money that the state would receive. So the taxpayer themselves would see an increase in, or rather it would result in less funds for Olympia and more funds for the local jurisdiction. Those amendments were rejected. The rhetoric we heard from the majority party was, in effect, you know, we trust the voters. We just don't trust the voters that much. So I weren't going to let those amendments get through, but that was the majority of how my week was spent last week.
How about you, Representative Engel? We talked last week about, and you didn't get a chance to talk about it. Maybe we should just revisit a little bit. Now, your Wolf bill, it looked so good and had bipartisan support, was a victim of political maneuvering in Olympia. You want to talk about that a little bit before?
Sure. That was, I guess, a dose of reality, perhaps, but a little depressing here. I went into the committee hearing, executive session, which we were going to vote on the bills, expecting to vote my Wolf bill out of committee unanimously because all the Democrats on the committee had expressed support for it, and we'd worked with the conservation groups to get the language in such a way they could support it. And we're getting ready to vote on that bill, but there was also another bill to allow the reintroduction of grizzly bears to the North Cascades, and which, of course, I can't support. I have not found that community support for that bill, and we're getting ready to vote, and the chair leans over to the ranking member, who leans over to me and asks if I'm going to vote for the grizzly bear bill. And I said, I can't vote for that. And he said, well, she said, if you don't vote for the grizzly bear bill, your Wolf bill is going to be dead. And it wasn't much of a choice. I'm like, I can't do that. And he whispered back to her, and she announced to the crowd that she was pulling the bills. So that was disappointing, and unfortunately, it means that we'll have at least one more year that our people struggling with conflicts with wolves are not going to have any more options. So that was pretty sad for our district. And it predominantly affects our district.
Yeah, and people don't understand that, I think. I mean, in your district, and these are the people who are listening to this radio show right now, they do. But I think here in Olympia, people may not understand that things like wolves and grizzly bears disproportionately affect the 7th District just because of its location there in the northern part of the state where a lot of this is happening.
Well, and I think I've mentioned this before on the program, but we have more than twice as many wolves in our district as is necessary to repopulate the entire state to full restoration. The problem is that they're not naturally leaving and going into the Olympia area, which is the deficiency. The Southwest Washington does not have any known wolves right now, and our state wolf plan says until they have wolves in Southwest Washington in a sustainable manner, they can't be removed from the list entirely. My bill would have just downlisted, so they still would have been protected, but would have had a lot more flexibility for the agency to help out our people struggling.
So just so people understand how things work here in Olympia, we have a series of deadlines that we have to meet before bills, for bills to move forward or for bills to die. And a couple of those big deadlines happened the last couple of weeks. One was bills had to be out of fiscal committee, out of policy committees by a certain point, and then they had to be out of the fiscal committees by Friday. And so a lot of bills didn't make it. Past those deadlines, they sometimes can come back, but for the most part, they're dead. And one of those bills that died, I know you were following very closely, Representative Abel, I'm guessing called the hospital merger bill. But you know, maybe you could explain a little bit more fully what this bill does and why you're happy that it did not move forward.
Yeah, I'm thrilled that this bill did not move forward. And a bit of backstory here. This is a bill that came up last session that would put the Attorney General squarely in the middle of any mergers or significant changes for hospitals and clinics, and especially our rural hospitals and rural clinics out in our 7th District. That was a concern that certainly I had. This was a huge battle last session, and the Democrats faced with significant response both from the Republican Party but also from the public, ended up finally pulling the plug on the bill at the 11th minute of the 11th hour of the last session. It was my understanding is it was the last bill to die, and a lot of pretty significant gnashing of teeth by the Democrats as a result of what happened to the bill last session. So fast forward to this session, you might remember that 6 weeks ago or whatever, one of the first thing that the majority did is they changed the rules in the House to reduce the threshold to cut off debate from a supermajority down to a simple majority. And what I've heard repeatedly since then is this is a result of the hospital mergers bill. In effect, we did too good of a job of fighting against that bill. They don't want it to happen again. And so that's a pretty significant indication this is going to be a huge priority for them this session. Well, jump forward now to last week, this bill, which received very strong opposition from both, again, our caucus as well as the public, ended up not being passed in time before the policy cutoff. So this is a great result for our rural hospitals and our rural clinics. We don't need the Attorney General in the middle of those business decisions about how they're going to keep their doors open and continue serving our patients. So very, very happy about that.
I think that's what people don't understand is that, especially in rural areas such as the 7th District, these hospitals and these medical clinics face some real serious pressures. And sometimes they have to get creative to, as you said, keep their doors open. And that's why you're opposed to this, because, if the Attorney General all of a sudden is playing a role, that's going to muck up the talks, basically, to be able to keep the doors open sometimes.
Yeah, it would. One of the things that we heard from a variety of medical organizations throughout the 7th is that they're working really hard to make sure that they're providing the quality of care that our patients need out in the 7th District. If sometimes they consider a merger or a change of ownership or something along those lines, it's always with an eye of trying to ensure that they're able to keep their doors open and continue serving patients. And putting the Attorney General in there, one, the Attorney General is the top legal officer. The Attorney General is not qualified or experienced or trained to have any understanding of the operations of medical organizations. And so that was a big knock on the bill. And so at any rate, I was very pleased that this bill ended up dying before it could pass out of the committee by the necessary deadline.
And the bill that would have done the killing got killed at South Senator Short. The initiative killer bill died. This was something that I know that the Senate Republican caucus was vehemently against, this initiative killer bill. Maybe talk, kind of refresh our memories on what that bill was all about and what happened to it.
Sure. So that bill would have required onerous requirements on signature gatherers, increased penalties, basically throwing out signatures if their address was different. Actually, it had a higher threshold of requirements than actually just voting in our elections. Both of our secretaries of state, the current one and Sam Reed, spoke against it. I think what ended up happening with the bill wasn't that the Democrats weren't supportive. It's just it died under the weight of the cost to implement. I think given the issues that are happening this year with the budget and the overspending that's been done the last many years to land us where we are today, there were a lot of bills that had the same fate. So what I love is that people in our district and across the state of Washington were vehemently opposed, and they shared that opposition when we heard the bill in state government committee. And so regardless of why it died, I'm just glad it did. That would have absolutely shut down the People's Right to Initiative in the state of Washington. We've seen similar things happen in Oregon, similar propositions, and it is all but shut down theirs as well.
That was interesting. The Democrat Secretary of State and the former Republican Secretary of State, or one of them, Sam Reed, both testified against that bill. Both of them said it was ridiculous. It was interesting to me to see their level of opposition in the Senate Budget Committee. Does that kind of show, Senator Short, that this really was a bad bill? I mean, I don't know. And sometimes bad bills do die. I mean, do you think the current and former Secretary of State testifying played a big role in that?
Oh, I think it did. Absolutely, it did. But you look at the increased costs, and really the other side, the folks who were supporting this bill said, well, the Secretary of State's not doing his job. And I vehemently disagree with that. We know that when you go out and you gather signatures that you need, you know, X amount more than what's required for those signatures that do drop off. And there is nothing that supporters showed the committee that signaled that the current system wasn't working to protect, you know, to protect the integrity.
Well, and one thing that I would chime in as well, something that the Secretary of State's talked about, but something also we heard a lot about from the voters was a reminder that this process is constitutional. Mm-hmm. This is squarely laid out in our Washington State Constitution. It shouldn't be messed around with lightly, and I was glad to see that this proposal ended up dying.
Yeah, one of the things Representative Corey mentioned recently is that it seems like bills like that and the rules change in the House are meant to kind of stymie opposition. Do you get the feeling sometimes, I'll put this out to all of you, that the Democrats may not even want to hear at this point from Republicans, or is that too harsh?
Well, I'll jump on that. There does seem to be a pattern here where not only does the majority party disagree with our proposed solutions, increasingly they don't even want to hear them. And one thing that I remind people is that the purpose of debate is to ensure that all sides are fairly laid out, but also to improve and strengthen the quality of the final legislation that comes through. I mean, the perspective of the minority is, in fact, a gift to the majority for the resulting legislation that ultimately ends up coming out. So to shut that down, I think, is really problematic and does a disservice to the voters in the process.
Well, it really does. And I think part of that, you know, I've been here a while now, and I've seen when majorities are close. You know, I served in the House when it was, 50-48, and then was in the majority in the Senate, even though the House was not in Republican hands, the Senate was. And I think what you end up having is more balanced, thoughtful legislation. And bills that are really, I would consider, way out on the fringe just really never gain any traction because there is that balance. And unfortunately, you know, today there's not that balance of power. I think in the Senate, you know, we have opportunities to work across the aisle. It's a little bit different feel, but, you know, we've seen, you know, games being played too, where you know, amendments aren't taken, or a bill we've worked really hard to bring forward, like, let's say, the emergency powers bill, which the governor, this governor supported. He supported Senator Wagoner's version. Then he ended up having the Democrat majority come down on him to the point where the proposal that the Democratic majority offered in committee actually made current law worse. And so you still have those games, which really gets super frustrating. But, you know, we're continually honored to do what we're doing and to fight for the people of our district in the state of Washington who want to see less government, less intrusion, more thoughtful approaches about, you know, how we do our work, how we fund state government. And so it, you know, we keep going.
Well, we also have fundamental principles of representative government that is what's largely made our country great and our states function, where this idea that representatives represent all types of people in their districts and that they come together to do what's best for the people at large. And you expect that the majority party or the people who are elected have a platform that they serve on, but they're still supposed to take into account the concerns of the minority and make sure that they are allowed to inform and correct and refine the legislation coming out. And unfortunately, when you shut down debate, that is less possible and creates more resentment and polarization at a time when we really need to be working to increase trust in our government and not decrease it.
One thing I would chime in there as well is something that I have heard. Again, I haven't been here very long. Representative Engel and I are both brand new. But there are differences between the chambers, and Senator Short may have thoughts on this as well. The House is very much majority-driven, in that sense, somewhat akin to the U.S. House of Representatives with the state Senate, of course, longer terms, less members, so more discretion and power with individual senators as well. So that's interesting certainly for me to experience on the House side.
I mean, do you think because of what's happening at the federal level, do you think that Democrats are a little bit more dug in this year? I mean, there's this idea that I've heard them say that, you know, that, you know, here in Washington, we're the resistance, right? Do you feel like that is playing any role this year? Because I guess I've only been with the Senate for 6 years, but it seems to me that it is a little bit more partisan this time around than it has been in the last few years. And Senator Short, you could correct me if I'm wrong on that, but that's just the feeling I get.
I think it has more to do with the individuals who are getting elected to the districts. That's where I've seen a big change. You know, the House, when I served there, it's really hard. Like, we're all grassroots driven. Like, we all want and are passionate about the job we're doing, but it's different. And they see, it's really hard. It's hard to explain and put your finger on it, but I don't believe there's a respect for the legislative process and just how it functions and, you know, the going back and forth and the give and take, you know, that is a part of building those relationships. I think the individuals who are in the legislature now don't have that appreciation and maybe they don't have that experience, you know, and I feel for me, you know, since the statehood, you know, there's been a legislative body, and you think of all the people and the hard work that's been done and the people who have walked the steps of the Capitol, you know, before us. And I think there's a responsibility to protect it, to protect how it operates, and to really utilize that and just understand that there's processes and being in the minority, you know, you're going to lose most of the time, but just having that respect for our governance structure, our constitutional structure in the state of Washington. And I really feel there are a lot of people that it's just kind of their way or the highway. And they just don't see the value in, you know, working a bill. I'm often struck by how people say, well, no, this is the way I want it. It's good the way it is. And I'm like, well, there's 147 people in the legislature and the governor who might, you know, want to change it. And just not being nimble with that and at least not looking at, oh, well, maybe this would make a bill better. And I think, too, they haven't had to. you know, they've been in the majority. The Democrats have many new members coming in as Democratic members, you know, have been clearly in the majority where they're arguing with their own caucus members more than with us in terms of getting legislation passed. So it's just different. And I don't like to think about what's going on in the other Washington affecting this one. I think we do a lot of good work in a bipartisan way. And yeah, we do have dust ups, and we will in the next 10 days until we're off the floor on March 12th. So we'll see.
That's a good way to pivot. And actually, we'll do that here in the next half hour. But I wanted to give you guys a chance to maybe talk a little bit about what, I mean, you know, you're viewing this a little bit differently. You're both freshman representatives, you know, so you don't have anything to compare it to. but, you know, I mean, is it kind of what you thought, or is it different than what you thought was going to be happening?
Well, I'll jump in there. I would say in some respects, it's kind of what I thought. In other respects, it's different. So the respects in the way that it is what I thought it was going to be, the long hours, you know, I expected that. A lot of appointments, you know, all day, pretty much every day, except when we're on the floor. And even when we're on the floor, sometimes we've got folks who want our time. And I know Representative Engel and I try hard. If it's folks from back home, and if we've got a minute between votes, we're going to step out and say hi. People come a long ways out to see us. We want to make sure that we get a chance to say hello to them and honor them. Other ways, it's like what I thought it was going to be. I have enjoyed some of the legislative give and take, you know, on trying to make bills better, or in some cases, if there's a really bad bill coming down the line, do what we can to try and make it less bad if we can't stop it. You know, sometimes obviously the first goal is to stop it if we can, but if we can't, let's take a lot of the sting out of it. I was looking forward to the collegiality and the teamwork with our 7th district, and it's been exactly what I was hoping for. So that has really been great between Senator Short and Representative Engel. Ways that it's different. I guess I wasn't really fully prepared for how hungry I would be throughout the day. I have to eat a lot of protein bars just to kind of keep going. It's more caffeine driven than I expected. I drank coffee before I arrived. I feel like I'm drinking it by the gallon now. So those are some of my thoughts. What do you think?
Largely the same. I will say that I expected it to be busy, and it is. I didn't really think about it being so busy that most days there's not time to eat anything. And so as Representative Abel says, I do get hungry a lot. And some days it's so busy I don't even think about it until I'm heading home and realize I haven't eaten anything all day and my blood sugar is starting to tank a bit. Other times I found myself going for the hot chocolate they have at the side of the, which is not the best, they have it at the side of the dais, so in your committee you can go grab that. I've had it a couple times. I just needed a few extra calories, so that has been interesting. But I guess I found that the other legislators are surprisingly friendly and interesting to talk to. Little disappointing how it feels like they just fall right in line with the party line when it comes time to vote. But individual discussions, I really enjoy pretty much everybody that I've met here. There's a lot of nuance to the members here. It's a pretty eclectic group of individuals who've, you know, ran for office and managed to get here. And I really enjoy getting to know them. The lobbyists are also quite fascinating, and some of their tactics and friendliness, and it's just all a very unique learning experience that I've truly enjoyed. As Representative Abel said, I really enjoy, as I expected, working with him and Senator Short. It's a really great team here from Northeast Washington, and hopefully we'll be working together for some time. I also really enjoy how many people from the district have come back. Honestly, it's been more than I expected. I think we were talking maybe just a small handful this last week, but a lot of our weeks we've seen upwards of a dozen people or groups. Oftentimes there's a bigger group, so maybe 20 or 30 some weeks. And so that's been really great. And yes, I overall, it's been a good experience. Certainly disappointing when shenanigans happen, like what happened to my bill where you're expected to vote. You're told if you don't vote for a bad bill, then your vote won't get to move. And that's disappointing. And I think I'm just going to stand firm that I'm not going to take a bad vote regardless of the consequences. So hopefully that I can still make a difference, and I think I can. I'm thinking through what the plan is going forward to make the best difference I can for the people of Northeast Washington.
Well, I just want to apologize to you both you know, I thought Senator Short would have taken you around to show you where all the vending machines were. So you could. So, but you know, she apparently didn't think it's important to show her freshman seatmates where the food was in Olympia. So they're all walking around hungry, Senator Short.
Yeah, well, that's me too. I would also add that you have to put time in your schedule for restroom breaks. You think that wouldn't need to be a thing, but it is. And I will say I'm just really proud of how Andrew handled the whole bill thing. This place tests you, and it tests, you know, your character. It tests how you advocate for your district. And I always call them lines in the sand are my favorite description, but it really just is just something that's really resonated with me. They know who they can push around the system, whether it's other legislators, maybe sometimes your own caucus, but mostly, you know, people who either come in and visit or the lobbyists, you know, are they going to be able to push you around? And it's really important to stand that ground, even when it's really, really hard, you know, when you want something. And, you know, I've been told throughout the years not to want anything because then they can't bargain with it. But the fact that Andrew stood firm, you know, that signals to this place, the people who visit and work here, that his votes aren't going to be bought. And that's a really important salient piece.
This is Live from Olympia with 7th Legislative District State Senator Shelley Short and Representatives Andrew Engel and Hunter A. Bell on Okanagan Country Radio. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back. You can email me with your questions, tracy.ellis@leg.wa.gov. That's tracy.ellis@leg.wa.gov. Or call 509-826-0100, 509-826-0100. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit about where we are in the session and what's next. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Live from Olympia with 7th Legislative District State Senator Shelley Short and Representatives Andrew Engel and Hunter A. Bell on Okanagan Country Radio. I'm Tracy Ellis with the Washington State Senate Republican Caucus. You can email me with your questions, tracy.ellis@leg.wa.gov, tracy.ellis@leg.wa.gov, or call 509-826-0100, 509-826-0100. I mentioned before we went into break that we were going to talk a little bit about where we are in this legislative session. We talked about how we have these key deadlines, and a big one just passed. Basically, all bills have to be out of committee now. These are bills that originated in the Senate or the House. And so now what ends up happening is all these bills went through committee. They either came out of committee or they died, and the senators and representatives will vote on the bills, and that's what we're doing now. Right, Senator Short?
That's exactly it. In fact, we have our first full floor day today, and we will be on the floor through March 12th. March 12th is the next deadline where bills to stay alive, policy bills to stay alive need to be voted off of what they call their house of origin. So if you have House bills, they need to be voted out of the House. The Senate bills need to be voted out of off the Senate floor by March 12th.
Yeah, so then we go through this process again. All the House bills come over to the Senate, and the committees look at those bills and decide which ones will move forward, and all the Senate bills go over to the House, and the same thing happens over there. Are you guys looking forward to being on the floor and actually voting? I always think that's kind of, to me, that's what being a senator or a representative is voting on bills, on the floor, debating, that kind of stuff. Are you looking forward to it, or are you, like, dreading it?
No, I would say I'm definitely looking forward to it. We've had some good experiences on the floor so far. Got a chance to review a number of bills coming through. Of course, in the House, it's different than Senate. In the Senate, they vote by oral roll call. So they name each of the senators, and the senator says aye or nay. In the House, we vote by a button. So we've got a button at our desk, and we vote yay or nay. And up over the speaker, there's a big board with everybody's name. And if you vote aye, it comes up green. If you vote nay, it comes up red. And so we hear usually somebody speak briefly in support of the bill. Then we hear somebody speak briefly in opposition to the bill. Sometimes a little bit more debate takes place. And then the vote starts. You see everybody's names pop up there, and the colors start start, filling in there. And so it's a good indication to see pretty immediately how the vote is going. Because we're in the minority all too often, it's not the way we necessarily want. But that's the way the process works in the House. But I would say certainly being new, it's been a great experience for me to see the discussion, hear the discussions take place and become more familiar with the voting process. So I think we're ready for it. We've got a lot more bills that we're going to be tackling over the course of the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to this section of that it's going to be significantly different than the first several weeks that we've been here. And I've been spending the last week or so preparing by looking into all the bills that are coming my way and thinking about the concerns. You know, we've got a few bills that are particularly concerning to me, but I am looking forward to this debate and voting and losing.
Well, listen, that's not always the case. Senator Short talks about this often, and you guys will see this too. I mean, a lot of these bills are bipartisan. I mean, there are just a ton of them. Like, people have this impression that every bill is this big fight, and it's partisan. But there are a lot of bills that, listen, are just good common sense stuff that are unanimous, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I would say that is very true. Most of those bills don't do a whole lot. They're not controversial. Right. But we have a lot of legitimate things that come to the committees. There's someone's had an issue. It needs to be fixed. There's a regulation that needs to be amended or eliminated, or every once in a while there's a legitimate regulation to be added. And they'll come to the committee, we'll hear it, and we all agree, yes, that makes good sense, and we'll send it out of committee, and we'll be voting on those. Those will be easy votes, and I would say that probably a majority of the votes are like that. But the bills that people think about are much more controversial. Most of these bills that we're going to be passing, most of the public will probably never even really hear about them or understand exactly what they do. But if you see the unanimous vote, usually it's a good bill.
Yeah, I keep on hearing you over there, Representative Engel, talking about something called the WUI bill. And I'm just like, what is WUI? What's WUI? And I know it seems like, okay, he's talking about it a lot, so maybe I should ask him about it. What's the WUI bill?
Yeah, so the WUI bill is a very concerning piece of legislation. My kids love this kind of bill with a name like WUI. What it stands for is the Wildland Urban Interface. And this is something that there's the International Wildland Urban Interface Code, which an international board has developed to try to reduce the risk of wildfire taking out homes.
Sounds like Los Angeles, right? I mean, that would be Los Angeles would be a good example.
Yes,
right,
exactly. And there's a lot of good things in here. But most of the good things in this code is already implemented. And so there's a lot of bad things in here. Some things that would actually help, but they're cost prohibitive to actually implement. There's things that I believe would not even help at all. And then there's other things that is a dramatic increase of government being inserted into the lives of rural people. And those are what I'm especially concerned about. One of the things that would likely kill just about all future rural development if this bill was adopted is a requirement for 1,000 gallon per minute for 30-minute fire flow water availability. Well, there's a couple of things here. First of all, these wildland urban interfaces come into cities a lot of times, and state law only requires fire hydrants to produce 500 gallons a minute. So a lot of our cities don't even have adequate fire flow to allow construction if this code was adopted. That's concerning. But also outside of cities where you're on a private well, this would require the building of 30,000 gallon water storage tanks. And you can imagine a lot of the concerns with that.
Well, nobody thinks it's 30,000? Think of a 30,000.
Well, I looked it
how
up.
How would you describe it? Okay, yeah.
So a 30,000 gallon tank is 27 feet in diameter, 14 and a half feet tall.
That's a big tank.
That's a big tank. And also the code requires you protect this from freezing. So think about how you're going to do that. Probably you're going to have to put it in the ground. So, think maybe like a 17-foot deep hole by the time you get to put it in there, 35-foot diameter. This is a massive hole to put this tank in. This provision alone would probably stop virtually all affordable or mid-income housing to be constructed in rural areas. But also you're required to have you know, a pump that would pump that 1,000 gallons per minute of water out, and a backup generator to pump that. This is a massive generator to pump 1,000 gallons per minute. So this is a major concern. But other things also include, if this was adopted, you're required to get a permit to store tires on your property. When you think about rural areas in Northeast Washington, we often have our studded snow tires or our summer tires that we change out once a year. Imagine having to get a permit to store your extra four tires.
So even those, because I was thinking, okay, well, maybe like a massive storage of tires. You're talking even just your studded tires.
Well, the way that the code is written, it just says storing tires requires a permit. So it doesn't say that four are exempt. Maybe it is. Maybe that would be a negotiated. But also, it also has no smoking. I think it was within 30 feet of your house. And so you imagine smokers. That's a pretty, and there's no provisions for what time of year, being like during high fire season. So even in the wintertime, you know, imagine having to go 30 feet from your house to do your smoking. And I don't smoke, but a lot of people do. Also candles. You're not allowed to have candles near your house. If you think your citronella candle when you're out having a picnic. If you want to have a tent, like your a tent or a canopy, a lot of people have 4th of July parties, you'd require to get a permit to erect a portable tent. Wow. So there's a lot of things. But also there's a right of entry provision in here that would give code enforcement people the right to enter your property to make sure you're following the code. There's just a lot of concerns with this bill. I think that likely the bill sponsors don't even understand this. The code is pretty complex. I've been spending a lot of time digging into this. And also, I haven't found anywhere in the world the code has been adopted yet. I really don't think Washington should be the first.
I was going to say, I can't think of anything more un-American than requiring you to have a permit to put up your tent to celebrate 4th of July. It seems like government run amok there.
Oh, then during the 4th of July celebration, you can't smoke a cigar.
Yeah.
The three of you obviously are very concerned about wildfire. I mean, this is a huge issue in your area, and it's one of those areas where, you know, sometimes I'm surprised I hear legislators from Eastern Washington say, well, you know, this one area, maybe a little bit more regulation is okay. It's like, sometimes, because, you know, wildfire is so pervasive and it can be so devastating. But boy, that sounds like it goes beyond just being protected, but trying to help protect homes. It's just really stifling, you know, the ability to even build homes.
Well, there are groups that do not support. So if you look at Spokane County, probably 75% of it is in a wildland urban interface zone. And yet when you think of all the building codes and you think of all of the local land use, you know, all the things that you know, dictate to a local jurisdiction where they might be able to build, it's untenable. It just halts any kind of development at all. And, you know, what I want listeners to know, and I know a lot of folks have stepped up to do this, you know, there are FireWise programs that really, and our conservation districts do such great work in working with landowners to determine, you know, where might your vulnerable areas on your property be? And your road system and the vegetation that you have around the house, or, you know, the building materials that you use to protect, you know, to protect your walls and all of that kind of thing. Those things make sense. We've seen tremendous efforts over the years. I mean, we've done it on our own place. You really need to look around and say, where are my problem areas? People are already doing this. This bill is like one of the, I don't even have a word to describe it. Those are
wooey.
Well, yeah, but I mean, this bill acts as if nothing is being done, you know, to curb wildfire. We've had tremendous, you know, partnership with the state of Washington and the Department of Natural Resources. Hopefully that continues with the new commissioner. But just about pre-positioning of assets and wildfire fighting and all of the above and supporting our rural fire districts and all of the work, it's done in partnership. And I think last year we could have been Oregon had it not been for the foresight of the former commissioner, Hillary Franz, and her work and the local efforts and the state of Washington with the funding to both for firefighting, but then also for forest management and really thinking about partnership with the federal government and where could we do key, you know, key forest management projects to create kind of those zones where maybe the fire wouldn't advance. All of those things. This bill says that none of those things are going on. And I agree with Andrew. I'm sure the sponsors don't even have an idea of what this really does. But look, your well, your private exempt well, to put in a holding tank like that, you would use more water than you were probably legally able to. And it just, stunning isn't even a word. Actually, I've got a word I won't use on the line, online.
You could use buoy if you want.
Yeah. Well, it's just beyond nonsensical. It's un-American. It's over-regulatory, just all kinds of the above. But there's a lot that we have to be proud of in the state of Washington and the work that folks are doing.
I think it's worth also pointing out that building codes have gotten better in a lot of ways. And the modern houses are much more fire protected than older houses. In my experience, I was on a fire department for many years. Almost all of the houses that burn in these kind of fires are not the new houses. And so if you have the modern houses with a Class A roof and fire-resistant siding and just those things alone dramatically improves your odds of protecting the house. And then if you have some defensible space, that obviously goes a long ways. That's reasonable. A lot of what this bill requires goes far beyond that. And it doesn't address the root of the problem, which is a lot of these older homes that are embedded in the forest, they're not protected. They don't have defensible space. And it doesn't matter how much money you spend on trying to get that last 1% of protection on the modern houses, it doesn't address the actual root of the problem, which is unhealthy forests that need to be managed better.
Do you find something struck me as you were talking when you said the prime sponsor or the sponsors of the bill don't even know what's in this thing? Do you find that you have to do a fair amount of work? And we talk about wolves, we talk about grizzlies, talk about fires, educating your urban colleagues on what actually is happening in your district, because they just don't get out there. I mean, to be honest with you, not a lot of people get to the 7th District, I think, from Seattle. It's very vast. It's a vast district. Let me tell you, I've driven through the whole thing. You know, people, there's no way people could see everything that's going on out there. I mean, do you find that's part of your job is to really educate, you know, the Democrats in the majority are from urban areas, what's going on in these rural Eastern Washington districts?
Well, I'll jump in here. I would say absolutely. So I think both Andrew and I have been fortunate. We had many of our bills received hearings this session, which that's not always a guarantee. But at these bill hearings, we have an opportunity to introduce ourselves, say, you know, Representative Hunter Abel from the 7th. And then I take a moment to talk just briefly about the 7th to remind, especially the majority, that it's the largest, most rural district in the state. And if we have somebody coming to testify in person on the bill, just remind that in many cases, that's a 700-mile round trip, a couple of days worth of travel. Just to really illustrate the nature of our district, how far it is from Olympia, and the heavy lift it is for people to come and testify in person. That's one of the reasons we appreciate it so much. But absolutely, that's a huge part of our job, is just educating the majority about our district and how rural it is.
Absolutely, yes. And one thing that I guess has been a little bit surprising to me, which maybe it shouldn't have been if I just paid a little more attention to the maps before I got here, there's very few districts that are anything like ours. You know, ours is the biggest, the most rural, but also those in second, third, fourth place for the largest are significantly different than ours as well. Great districts, you know, the 9th, the 12th, the 16th, they're but largely commodity agriculture, or they have bigger cities than we have in them. And so what you commonly see, and we get into the Western Washington, there's a lot of somewhat rural districts as well, but they typically incorporate part of a large city. Mm-hmm. And most of the time, it feels like the representatives live in those large cities. And so they represent rural areas, but they didn't come from those rural areas of their district. And so it's really important for us to educate them. One example comes to mind with one of my land use bills, or actually two of them, where FutureWise effectively got them stopped. But I met with FutureWise's lobbyists, and they agreed to come spend 2 days this summer traveling the district and looking at these areas. And I think that's going to be important. Also, We got this other bill coming up. 1531 has made it out of committee, and it was highly controversial about preserving the ability of public health officials to address communicable diseases. I'm actually meeting with the bill sponsor this morning just to talk about the concerns that I've heard from our people about increasing power of public health. And he said it's about education, but the word implement in there certainly looks like it goes farther than that. And our Northeast Washington Tri-County Health District Director has concerns about eroding public trust further in public health when you basically make them what looks like you could make the case that this bill makes them dictators over public health. And that's not what we need in a state where public trust is declining. So I'm meeting with the sponsor this morning. If he really wants to focus on education, let's change the bill to be really clear that that's the only thing it can be used for.
That's interesting to me. People at home may not realize exactly what you're talking about. A little bit more on what that bill would do.
So the bill, you know, it says the bill's not very long. If you want to go read it, it's about half a page, House Bill 1531. But it says that health officials must, within available resources, implement and promote evidence-based appropriate measures to control the spread of communicable diseases, including immunizations and vaccines, and that the state and its political subdivisions may not enact statutes, ordinances, rules, or policies that prohibit the implementation and promotion of such measures. So when I read that, and I think when most people who are concerned about overreach read that, when they read the word implement, must, within available resources, implement and promote measures to protect people from communicable diseases, including vaccines. That doesn't sound like a good thing for people who've been terminated for employment for not having the COVID vaccine, or maybe they have a friend that was in that camp. It just doesn't sound good. And so if we want to allow them to be able to educate, that's one thing. But to create mandates is concerning.
Well, and it erodes local control using the advantage of the fact that local jurisdictions are an arm of the state constitutionally. They still have the right to dictate their own rules, you know, for local jurisdictions. And this flies in the face of it. You know, we saw this a little bit during COVID. There was an earlier bill as they were looking to create this gargantuan state public health response, where they tried to do the same thing. And at that point, we were successful in getting Tri-County out of it because of its unique nature, representing, you know, having a jurisdiction that represents three counties. And so largely we were unaffected with that initial bill. But this is not about education. This is about forcing local jurisdictions to do the state's bidding.
And you said it sounded like the Tri-County Health System itself has concerns about the bill. So it's not something that they're asking for.
Well, so one thing I'm finding here is that there's often ambiguous language in bills that people will disagree over what the point is. Mm. And as I'm here longer, I'm Sarah Senator Short, I can see her grinning over here. She understands deeper this, how this works. But people will commonly claim that a bill does one thing when the plain reading to someone like me is that something else. And so oftentimes these bills will pass and down the road they get used for things that was outside the intent of the bill sponsor, but that doesn't mean they're not still law.
Yeah, I mean, Representative Abel, you're a lawyer. I know you don't like to talk about it, but it's true. But, you know, I mean, could you look at a law like that and say, hey, this looks to me like it means we're doing this, we're implementing.
Yeah, this is a situation where, you know, the legal training is helpful, actually, yeah, to go back and say, you know, I have taken a look at this paragraph or this, you know, section, whatever it might be, and here's my reading of it, and just kind of underline, circle certain phrases and push it back. And when I've done that, I have frequently received, a fairly detailed response or an acknowledgement that, yeah, this needs more work. So that thinking critically, you know, in many ways, I think we're all kind of practicing law here in Olympia, you know, as far as trying to make good law. And so I do think that process of thinking critically is important. I know Andrew's been doing that, you know, since day one when he arrived, and this is a good example of that.
Just a couple minutes left, and I just want to kind of go around the table real quick and see, you know, where do you think things are going so far, and It's a lot to ask in 1 minute. So,
yes, just, it is.
Just very briefly, I mean, just talk about, you know, where we are, where we're going one more time.
Well, I think certainly, you know, the budget is going to be front and center, you know, as it should be here real quick to see how those things go. A lot of bills died, I think, because of the cost of the nature of bills. But then I see others that should and they aren't. And the question's really going to be, are we really going to be serious about creating a sustainable budget that doesn't burden Washingtonians any further than they already have? And we'll have to stay tuned for that.
Representative Abel?
Yeah, I'm watching a couple of things here. Tax hikes and gun bills, and I'm worried about them all. I talked earlier in the show about the proposed tax hikes that we saw. The gun bills were much earlier in the session, but we're going to see them come back. And so I'm watching those and trying to do whatever I can to stop those bad bills.
All right, 30 seconds, Representative Engel.
Well, the primary job of government is to protect people's rights to life, liberty, property, and the pursuit of happiness. I will say I am pretty concerned about the trajectory things are going and that the government here in Washington is largely not focused on those things and, in fact, is perhaps moving us the wrong direction. So that's my concern, and I'm going to be fighting and doing what I can to make a difference.
Who said that lawmakers can't be brief? Look at that. We still have 3 seconds left. So I want to thank you all for joining us for Live from Olympia and invite you back next week, same time, 8 o'clock right here on Okanagan Country Radio. I'm Tracy Ellis. Have a great day.